Mr. Westerwelle, thank you very much for your interesting lecture. I indeed have the impression that it was well prepared, so I'm very glad with that. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to give you the rules of our question and answer session. As you can see, there are two microphones in the room. If you want to ask a question, we please ask you to go there. So please use the microphones. And when you ask a question or make a remark, please try to attract my attention. If I give you the floor, please first say your name and then say what's on your mind. Questions should be in English. Please limit yourself to a maximum of one question and not a string of questions. If you want to explain the question, be as brief as possible, and possibly you will get a second chance if the lecturer has given you an answer to your question to reply to that, but that's the limit, because we hope that so as many people as possible will be able to ask questions, because we don't have a lot of time. We have about 1.5 hours. As the session deals with a guest lecture, I will at first only give the students the floor. So all the other people, however pressing their questions, will have to have a little bit of patience. So which of the students dares to ask the first question?
Hello, my name is Paolo Lopez Bonilla, student at Leiden. My question is, at least I would like to present the perspective. For me, Germany is the saving grace of Europe, because it's actually the one of the only countries that produces something and has the highest GDP. So from a German perspective, I would want to ask you if it's in the best strategic interest for Germany to reintroduce the Deutsche Mark if the euro collapses.
Oof. Where are you from?
I was born in Colombia, but I'm Dutch.
No, and I'm. I just try to convince you. There is no necessity to have any doubts about the German commitment about the euro and Europe, and about the future of Europe and the European Union. Yeah. And what I try to say in my last 30 or 40 minutes is that I'm 100% convinced that even for one of the strongest countries in the European Union, because there are other countries who produce something in the European Union, one of the strongest countries in the European Union, it is not only our desire, it's our destiny, the European Union. And for our own national interest, not only for any idealistic ideas and philosophy, not only for altruistic motives, it is in our own interest.
But if for example, the euro would collapse, then the best decision would be to go back to the Deutsche Mark, because you would have much more power as Germany,
yeah,
right?
But if the roof would fall down, we all are injured.
Yeah, but if the euro...
And I do not... I mean, there is no discussion in the German government, and not... I mean, you're asking me... an interesting question. What would you do if we would enter a catastrophe?
Yes.
And I would answer to this, I'm working hard to prevent this.
Okay, that's enough.
No, please, I'm sorry. This is a tough regime here.
Well, you don't know, but they were here an hour before you came.
I'm sorry.
I told them that if the minister comes here, because I wanted them to be in time, so they were here about 2 o'clock, I said, if the minister comes and if he gives his lecture, you have to really ask good and very strict questions. Okay. So I hope they will do that, but I can't guarantee anything. The second question.
I'm really glad that I already have my PhD. So, what I want to say, I didn't know that you waited here for 1 hour. I thought I was 15 minutes too late. So,
no, even
you know, there's something which stresses every German citizen is being late.
No, even if you would have been in time, they were here.
Thank you so
way
much.
Before, because I wanted them to be here.
Very
okay.
Good.
Hello, Pieter van der Meerakker. First of all, I want to make a remark. We Dutch in Holland don't have oil, but I think we have quite a lot of gas, so that was...
yeah.
My question is, I'm really inspired by your future, your telling us about the future of Europe, but when you're talking about the problems, we do have only have really financial problems with Greece, and I was wondering, you as a liberal, how do you feel about your first 2 points in the roadmap for Europe about making more regulations on the financial markets? How do you feel as a liberal about that, and worry too lousy with these rules before we have to implement them?
Thank you. First of all, I want to recognize officially from this podium, I'm happy with you that you have gas. wonderful. And whoo, this will save the Netherlands. I mean, please. And we back at home, we have coal. But we all know this is not the way how we will manage our future and how we will win our future. And you know this. Or do you really want to tell me you trust and have the confidence on your natural resources?
No.
Probably not. I mean, this is the reason why you're smiling. The second point about being a liberal and asking for more regulation in the financial market. What is a liberal? A liberal is someone who wants to have a maximum of freedom and a minimum of regulation, which means that regulations are necessary there where it touches a free and fair common life in a society. So liberal is not anarchism. Liberal means, of course, we need rules. For example, I think it is only fair that we have some rules for this discussion. We both are probably liberals.
I wouldn't bet on that.
Me either. So, I mean, this is not... I mean, the idea of liberal is to have a framework, to have free and fair circumstances for a good cooperative life. The rule of law, for example, is a liberal fundamental idea. And I mean, if you look to the financial markets, we all know that what we saw in the last years, starting with Lehman, is something which has nothing to do with the liberal idea. Because this, just go back to this money institute Lehman 3 years ago. The collapse of Lehman and later on of many other banks and money institutes and insurance companies and everything else, it touched the fundament of our society. I mean, it is not liberal, the idea they can do what they want, they can take the maximum of profit with them home, and I guarantee if they fail as taxpayer or as society. I think this is not the liberal idea. So it's necessary to have a framework which guarantees fair conditions in a society. And therefore, I think especially the financial market system is something where we have to work on. Absolutely 100% convinced this will not work.
But was Europe an anarchy then, before? Because you say we need rules, but was it an anarchy before then?
Of course not. But worldwide, we had in the financial segment too much of anarchy.
Okay.
I think in the global context, it's the best description. Let me answer, or let me add, if you allow, Mr. Chairman. Let me answer and add another point. For example, there was no global and European institute which was responsible for the banks and the money institutes. We had them on a national level, Bankenaufsicht, it's called in German. We had this on a national level. But we all know that this is not enough, because we can have the best programs in Germany, or you can have the best programs and rules in the Netherlands. In a global economy, it will not help you if, for example, one of your key players is infected because of investments or anarchism in other countries. And I think this is a clear context.
Okay, good afternoon. I'm Kranare Bektashi. As you might know, EU abolished the visa regime for the Balkan region, but not for Kosovo and Bosnia, only these two countries. As you mentioned, in your 20s, you couldn't move freely in Europe, and I think it's ironically because I am on my 20s and I cannot move freely in Europe as well. So, and
from which country?
I'm from Kosovo.
From Kosovo.
And I'm from a European country. So when do you think it's possible for Kosovo citizens to move freely in Europe?
Well, I mean, the polite answer is, I think this is necessary. Of course, the Kosovo, and not only Kosovo, also Serbia and other states of the Western Balkan, they have a clear European perspective. But it is always a mutual deal. So this means these countries are invited, step by step, to come closer to the European Union, but it's also necessary that they do their homework and that they fulfill the criteria. For example, the fighting against organized crime is decisive.
Do you think that these countries, the others besides Kosovo and Bosnia, have fulfilled the others and only these two countries cannot move freely?
No, I think it's not an answer. One answer fits all the others. I think we have to look into every country, and we have to answer, or we have to find an answer to every country. These are always unique cases. I mean, you know this because you're from Kosovo, and you know that the German commitment about Kosovo, and especially about the territorial integrity, is probably, together with others in the European Union, a role model for others. And we fulfill our leadership in this. But on the other hand, I mean, if you look, for example, to Croatia, of course with totally different historical background, but Croatia just fulfilled every criteria to enter the European Union. And this shows you, and this proves you, that the European Union means it serious when they invite all the countries of the Western Balkan to join the European Union, but to fulfill the criteria, and first, of course, to do their own homework. And the fight against organized crime is very important. Since I'm foreign minister, I have been two times in Kosovo, and especially the people in Kosovo, they know that they have very good friends in Germany. But we also insist that every country has to fulfill their own criteria. This is not only an answer to one country, this is an answer to all the other countries on the Western Balkan. For example, you know, because you're from Kosovo, that there is at the moment a really conflict, a serious conflict in North Kosovo. I've just been there at the border to Serbia, and you know that this is something we also addressed. The German Chancellor just a few weeks ago, address this in Belgrade, like I did last year. So it's not one country which we urge or which we encourage to do the homework. It is a goal for all the others.
Okay, thank you.
All right, I will give three more students a possibility. You will be next, and you will be the third one. And after that, the floor is free for anybody. Okay.
My name is Edward. Thank you for your speech. I think you're preaching for the choir when you speak about the future of Europe here. And many of your roadmap, it solves the financial issues we have right now. But I think this crisis goes deeper. It's about the spirit in Europe. It's about solidarity. It's about identity. And matter of fact is that on the streets, many people say, well, I don't really care about Greece. If they spend money like this, we don't really care. And as long as we have within Europe this political system where there's only national politicians deciding on the fate of Europe, and they all have to account for their own electorate, so national interests, how can we then actually evolve this European solidarity? The roadmap you show gives no answer to this crisis of Europe.
I think it did. First, let me respond one point what you said as an introduction remark. You said you are convinced. Why are you telling this here in this audience? I'm not sure, because I didn't want to convince you to identify yourself with Europe and the European Union. What I tried is to convince you to get up and to be one of the opinion leaders in the young generation. I think the really threat for the European idea is that the young generation thinks this is normal, and well, it has always been in this way, it will never change. And therefore, it is not enough to listen. It is necessary to speak, like you did at the moment. And it is necessary for all of you. Not the European political leaders will convince Europe and the European societies about the challenge, about the advantages of the European idea. You are the ambassadors for the European idea. Not him, not our ambassador, is the best man for this important work. It's you. And my point is, and this is the reason why I'm delighted to speak here, without kidding and without any ironical background. I really want to say, this is the most important thing, to understand there is time to listen, there is time to follow something, and then there is a crucial time where it is decisive to speak, to get up, to stand up. Where are the demonstrations pro-Europe on the streets? Where are they? Like I had them in my youth, for example. Where are they? Where is the young generation? Not only the Netherlands, I'm talking about many other countries. Where is the, I mean, you have your networking in Facebook and however this is called. Yeah. I told you there's life after the 40th birthday. Where are you? Where is the voice of the young generation? And I'm missing this. As someone who is not too old from my personal point of view, I think it is necessary that the young generations understands it is now time to go on the streets and not only to protest against this and against that, but pro something for Europe and about the European idea. You said something about the identity, which I really like very much, because I think this is a very, very constructive moment. Because, for example, you can go to many countries in the world, or you can ask young people in many countries in the world. A young Brazilian man can make a lot of money in the young country, can write a wonderful success, personal success story in Latin America. But if they want to have economic chances, opportunities, and also a life in safe and secure circumstances, it has a lot to do with our European advantages. Or look to this young Chinese lady. She has millions of chances. She can reach everything. But hundreds of millions of young Chinese people write breathtaking success stories of the moment. But when they want to live in a free society with civil rights and in an ecological acceptable area, probably Europe has some advantages. And this is, I think, part of the European identity. We always, when we discuss Europe, we always hear United States of Europe. And this is the idea because we know this word from the United States of America. But United States of America is a melting pot. Europe is not. In Europe, we have our cultural identities. In the United States, you have more and more a melting pot of many ideas, and more or less you have at the end, in a wonderful country, a similar mentality, one language, more or less. And this is something which is also our advantage. It's not a disadvantage for Germany, for Europe, in my German eyes. I think it's an advantage for us.
If I could just... So you say that my generation should go onto the street to convince your generation or those in charge.
Yeah, of course, my generation.
To go for, with all due respect, to convince those in charge to go for federal Europe.
I think your generation is too silent.
Okay.
I think your generation is too silent. And because this is a frank discussion... Yeah, maybe I shock you. I, of course, do not want to do this, but I think your generation is too silent about Europe. We have many demonstrations, many protests against this and against that, but this is the time where the young generation, from my point of view, should be engaged pro-Europe.
All right, we'll go to the next question there.
Dear Mr. Westerwelle, in your speech you opposed to a re-nationalistic course of view. German European politics. How would you interpret the fear in the criticism of people, for instance, like Helmut Schmidt or Helmut Kohl, where they did see such a course?
Well, I mean, both historical statement said something different. And I think it's a bit difficult to say that they have the same message. For example, Chancellor Kohl, and I know him quite well, and I had the honor to work with him in the 90s for 4 years. Chancellor Kohl is a really European citizen. And when I said, in my words, the young generation is too silent, probably he would say the same. But he would not only say this to you, the young generation, he would also say this to my generation. So when I say there is a lack of engagement in the European issue, it is not that I want to criticize you and your generation. It is that I want to mobilize us. This is the idea. And probably Chancellor Kohl would say the same thing in his words. And I think he's right.
Do you think you use other criteria to engage for Europe than, for instance, in his time when he
Yes. No, but I think it's always how you live and how you grew up. For example, the generation of Helmut Kohl and of former Foreign Minister Hans-Dietrich Genscher, they are now 80, 81, roundabout in the early 80s, they are. In their early 80s, they are. Like my father and my mother, they grew up during Second World War. Of course, this prince the footsteps into your mind, into your mentality, into your political convictions. If you saw the war, you know that how important peace is. My generation, like I said before, I was born 61. So I had nothing to do in my personal life with the war. I never felt hunger in my life in the 60s. Probably there were some buildings in Cologne or in Bonn, in the Rhine Valley, where we could see the ruins of the war, in this corner and that corner, but this was not the dominant picture I had when I grew up. And I saw, for example, that peace is normal. I was never afraid, even in the time of the confrontation between East and West, I was never really afraid that there is an upcoming war. But, for example, I grew up and I saw how Europe was, how difficult it was to come together. So when I started to be interested in politics a bit in the early 80s, and I was very young from my point of view when the wall fall. Of course, the ideas of borders, of walls, of death belts, these essential human rights for freedom and traveling, of course, this was for me and my generation very, very important. And when I'm looking around now, probably I'm a bit affected yesterday by our 3rd of October. How old are you, if I may ask?
How old are you?
Yes, please.
24.
24. So, of course, you have no personal memory about unification of the European Union.
No.
Of course not. But it's obvious, and I think you understand this, that for my generation, I was a bit older than you are now, I was the end of my 20s, when the wall fell. Of course, this was probably the most impressive moment, political moment in my life. And this is probably, if you look back, and in 20 years, and you will remember the challenges of your days, of your young time, I think you will remember two things. Hopefully the Arab Spring with a happy end. And probably also, and hopefully, that we managed this European crisis.
Okay, thank you. That's the last question for the students.
I'm very happy to be the last student asking you. It's a pleasure. My question is, there is a very interesting article in New York Times today that really lays out how the United States is cutting its foreign aid across the board, and partly because of its austerity measures kicking in. Now, it's not exactly counterintuitive that what's only a small speck, minuscule part of the US total budget, it is disproportionately big for countries that actually need aid, including the Horn of Africa and Middle East, for example, Libya and Syria still wanting it. Mrs. Clinton was also quoted saying that it's great that there is Arab Spring going on, but it's too bad that it has come during a time when we are in financial crisis and there cannot be a Marshall Plan for Middle East. My question to you is Germany and itself and being a major member of the European Union, one of its biggest and most powerful members, does it have a European Marshall Plan for Middle East?
Well, first of all, I would like to underline that, of course, I cannot make any comments to this article in the New York Times you are quoting. I do not know this article. I didn't read it. So I do not want to make any comments to this specific article and to this quotation like you introduced it here in this discussion by Hillary Clinton. But about the Arab Spring, this is the region south of Mediterranean is our direct neighborhood. And I can tell you that not only because of refugees, many other reasons, this is very important not only for the development of the region, but also for the development of Europe and the European Union. And I'm especially not talking about the refugees at the moment. This is one specific problem, and I want to do not want to comment this at the moment because it's also necessary, but not at this. It's not my point in the message. And if you look to these Maghreb countries or to the Arab countries, you have different solutions and different answers. You had a revolution in Tunisia and in Egypt. We hope that this will come to a happy end. We saw the revolution with this war in Libya. We see what's going on in Syria. We saw that, for example, the king in Morocco decided to go, probably early enough, the way of evolution, of reforms. So did the king of Jordan. At the end, it is not our decision which way these societies will choose for themselves. It's Tunisian ownership, Egyptian ownership, Moroccan ownership, Jordan ownership, Libyan ownership. They have to decide their own way. But what we can offer is support in our own interest. In our own interest. Therefore, for example, the German government decided to increase our budget. We established a special program which we called Transformation Partnership. So we are just in our budget discussions in the German Bundestag, and I hope the Bundestag will accept this proposal, but I think they will do. For example, the budget of my ministry has increased, especially for a program for the Transformation Partnership. But let me tell you, I'm convinced that this will not be enough. Of course we will support the civil societies. We will encourage German business people to go there to invest. Of course we will help to establish free medias, the rule of law, independent parties, election law, and everything else. Of course we say to our tourists, to this or that country you can go, or to this holiday resort you can go once again, and it's worse to go there. But everything of this will not be enough. I will announce you what the discussion will come up in the next months. The discussion is, will we open our markets for this countries who decided to go the way into the direction of democracy and freedom? Will we be encouraged and brave enough to open our own markets? And then you will see egoistic interests. Well, revolution is fine, reforms are perfect, but not over the limits of vegetables and tomatoes. on our markets. This is a problem. So from my point of view, it is not enough to say we help these countries with direct financing, with aid, how you said, this is important. And you know that Germany and the Netherlands, we are very engaged for humanitarian reasons and with medical treatment and so many programs what we do. At the end of this discussion, we have to decide, will we open our markets? Because then they will have a chance, probably, to have a sustainable, prosperous development in their own countries. If not, you can subsidize these countries with billions and billions and billions. You will not change the situation. And you should not forget these people, these especially young people. My first visit was to Tunisia, to the Boulevard Bourguiba there, in front of the Café Tunis, where the whole story in Tunis started. And two things are very impressive for me. The one is, of course, there were people in your age, and they went on the street, not only younger people, also older, and in my generation, went on the streets, and not only men, also women, which is also very important. First thing what they told me is this. This was the best instrument and the tool for this revolution. Not mine, theirs. And the second thing what they said is, yes, we seek for democracy, for freedom, for less corruption. We seek for the rule of law. But you know something? We also want to have a better life. And because I told you a bit about our German history and about our peaceful revolution, and the peaceful revolution we saw a bit more than 20 years ago in the eastern part of Europe, I can tell you there is a connection between the success of this reforms and this revolution and a better life for the family and for the people, that they have a better perspective. So I wouldn't reduce the whole issue to the budget. We think we do a lot as Germans, and Europe does a lot in our own interest. I think it's also important to help them that they have an independent, sustainable, prosperous economic development, because probably this will decide whether we will see a positive, democratic, secular development or a more fundamentalistic development in these countries with less human rights than we hope to see there. So thank you so much for your attention. Thank you so much that you invited me. It was a great honor to speak here. I wish you all the best, and I hope to see you soon again. Thank you so much.